welcome to the Badass Breastfeeding Podcast. This is Diane, your lactation consultant.
And I'm Abby, the Badass Breastfeeder, and today's episode is brought to you by Fairhaven Health. Stop battling with storage bags filled with either too little or too much milk. The Milky's milk trays freeze your milk into 1 ounce sticks. And today's episode is also brought to you by Rumble Tough. The Rumble Tough Breeze is a top-of-the-line breast pump with a rechargeable battery that fits in the palm of your hand. And we'll hear more from our sponsors a little later, but you can head to badassbreastfeedingpodcast.com and check out our sponsor page. If you need anything, see if you can give them any of your business because they make this podcast possible. And while you're there, scroll down and enter your email address and we'll send episodes straight to your inbox every week. And you could check out our other things there, like all of our other episodes and our resources and our shop page. And we are on Patreon and we really hope that you join us there because it is really fun. We're having lots of fun on our Zoom hangouts and our mini podcast videos and our extra ad-free episodes and our Revolution Parenting episodes are being posted over there.
I'm so glad we posted them there.
I know. It's finally they have a home.
I know.
And the link to join the Patreon and to check out the different tiers is at the top of the show notes under this episode, wherever you're listening from. And we are still hosting our ongoing giveaway. So send us a screenshot of your review, wherever you can post a review of this podcast on the internet. Send the review, send your address over to badassbreastfeedingpodcast@gmail.com and we'll send you a goodie bag. And now Diane has our review of the week.
I do have our review of the week. And it's a little long, but I like it. I found out about this podcast after meeting Diane at a Babies and Bumps event while pregnant. I love listening to podcasts, so I thought this would be a great resource to have in my back pocket when my baby came. When my little one actually did come, this podcast helped save our breastfeeding journey. When we first got home from the hospital, I listened to the episode explaining cluster feeding because my baby was constantly at the boob and I was nervous he wasn't getting enough. That episode helped reassure me that this was completely normal newborn behavior. Even though my baby was latching, he wasn't gaining weight. My doctor just told me to feed him more and that I needed to eat more. Since I had been listening to the podcast, I knew that wasn't the reason. So I called a lactation consultant because that's what Abby and Diane say you should do if you feel like anything is wrong. Sure enough, my baby wasn't transferring well and was working so hard that he was putting himself to sleep at the boob. I was told to triple feed, which was the worst, and insisted there was a better way of handling our situation after listening to an episode on that topic. I found a feeding therapist that put us on a more sustainable feeding schedule, and eventually my little guy figured it out. When I got the okay to stop supplementing with bottles, I listened to the episode about that, and it made the transition so easy. We've been exclusively breastfeeding ever since. Thank you so much. For Diane and Abby, I have one episode request. I'd love to hear other mamas' stories of their trials and successes with breastfeeding. Breastfeeding can be difficult, and when I heard other mothers overcoming their struggles, I knew we would figure it out too. I think it would be a great motivator for other moms who might be struggling. Thanks again. So I love this girl. She totally like listened to us and did what we said, which not that everybody has to do that, but she's like, well, Diane and Abby said to do this. So yeah, I mean, like, so I think that's amazing that, you know, and I mean, I love, people say all the time, like, there's an episode for everything. And there is, like, we can say that, we can like honestly say that there really is an episode for things that you might be going through. You can probably find an episode for it that will help and support you through that. It's just, that's why we do this, you know, that's why we're here. So, and this, I thought this was also good because we're going to Babies and Bumps and that's where we met. So she found me at Babies and Bumps and we're going to be there in this weekend. So while you're listening to this, we're at Babies and Bumps. Oh no, just past it. Just yeah. Past Babies and Bumps. Yeah.
Past, yeah. Just happened yesterday, but this was previously recorded because podcasts aren't live.
Yeah.
So we can't tell you right now how it went.
I know. So we'll have
but
to
you
tell
can
you
check out
that.
On social media. We're going to be, we are posting about it like the whole day.
But you know, that's where we originally met with the Babies and Bumps. And today we're going to talk about a lot of this physiologically normal stuff, which obviously she kind of like had figured that out too. Like, why is this baby feeding all the time? Oh, this is normal. Okay. So we're going to talk about that today. So hopefully a lot of you listening today will have that. Oh, so what my baby's doing is normal kind of a feeling leaving this episode today. So
yes.
So this article,
go ahead.
We're going off this article today that I found. And we have done a few things from the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. We did the sleep protocol we talked about. We talked about the mastitis protocol. And this is, again, from the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. And if you haven't listened to the other ones yet, the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine is doctors that practice breastfeeding medicine. So these protocols are being put out by medical doctors, medical professionals who are telling us, like, look at this is what's going on with your body and with your baby. And this is what's, you know, what we suggest should happen. That's what these protocols are based off of. This is a free resource, and I'm going to link this, you know, I'll link this article in the, in our show notes, but the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine is a website. You can get the protocols, you can read them, you can, you know, there's all sorts of resources there that will help to educate you and give you some information if you're not sure, like, what is going on, you know. But this is one of the newer ones that came out, and it's called Physiological Infant Care: Managing Nighttime Breastfeeding in Young Infants. And this is clinical protocol number 37. And I love this because it talks about what is normal for nighttime with your baby and how to help yourself get through it. And I love it. And yes, the day that I got this, or the day that this popped into my email and I was reading it, I was like, I happened to get a text from a client that I've been working closely with for months, and her baby is now it was 9 months at the time, her baby's almost 10 months now, but it was like right after the 9 month visit where she was told, like, your baby shouldn't still be waking up, your baby shouldn't still be eating during the night. Ugh. Your baby shouldn't be blah blah blah, your baby shouldn't be. And then I received this article and I sent it to her, and it's like totally contradicts every single thing that she was told, because it is normal for babies to wake up and eat during the night. And it is normal that they want to be in close proximity to you still.
Right. You know, these things are, like, normal. Yes, these are biologically normal things. This is the way your baby is wired. And one of the things they said early on, and I can't find it now because I wasn't able to highlight it because whatever, I have technology.
Abby had a fight with her printer.
Right now. I did. I would say the printer wouldn't work. It's like one of those Wi-Fi ones and it won't connect to the Wi-Fi, but we also spilled our dishwasher, leaked down through the floor and onto it. And like, it's turning on now, but it won't connect to the Wi-Fi. Anyway, I was trying to work with this yesterday. My husband's like, have you tried punching it? I was like, yeah, of course.
Duh. Of course I tried punching it.
Yeah, that was like the second thing I did.
Oh my God.
So anyway, it doesn't matter the exact sentence, but they talk about early on in this article about how breastfeeding is self-soothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we say, well, babies shouldn't nurse. They should learn how to sleep. They should learn how to do this on their own. They should learn how to self-soothe. Breastfeeding is self-soothing.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. They are self-soothing. And I think that is just something that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are soothing themselves by suckling on your nipple. That's what they do.
They absolutely, yes. So I'm going to read this in the beginning, just a basis of why they did this protocol. Having a newborn can be overwhelming, even for experienced parents. Infant feeding and getting sufficient sleep are among parents' biggest concerns. Young infants require frequent feedings day and night, particularly those who are breastfeeding. This can be a challenge to parents who are balancing other responsibilities such as work outside the home, caring for older children, and daily household responsibilities. The goal of this protocol is to address managing these challenges in the context of normal physiology for breastfeeding diets. Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine Protocol Number 6, Bed Sharing and Breastfeeding, serves as an important adjunct to this protocol. And that's the one that we went over. I don't know when it was. It was one of our previous episodes. I'll link it in the show notes. So normal infant feeding patterns. This is the first thing that they talk about. A newborn will breastfeed 8 to 12 times per 24 hours, but not necessarily in regular intervals. And I think that is the part that's left out all the time. We say, oh yeah, babies will breastfeed 8 to 12 times in 24 hours.
Yeah.
That is not even written in stone, because for a newborn, like a brand newborn, it might be more like 15 times or 18 times. Mm-hmm. And not at normal interval. Plain and simple. That's your cluster right. feeding.
Yeah.
You know,
sometimes they're napping longer.
Right, right. Yep. Very, very important. So one of the other things that they're talking about here is they call it responsive feeding. That's another thing that we don't really address with breastfeeding. They call it responsive feeding, which is also called on-demand or baby-led feeding. Responsive feeding, you're responding to your baby's needs. Puts no restrictions on the frequency or length of the infant feeds, and mothers are advised to breastfeed whenever the infant is hungry or as the infant wants, acknowledging the healthy infant's self-regulate intake by combining nutritive with non-nutritive suckling. So the reason why I'm like, the reason why
I know this gets me so fired up. It really does. I don't know what to say.
Because of the whole, like, the baby's using me as a pacifier. The baby's, you know, when people say, don't let your baby just sit at the breast. People ask me all the time, is it okay if the baby's just there?
It's needed.
It is necessary. And this is the reason why they self-regulate their intake by combining nutritive with non-nutritive suckling. This is really important for them.
Yeah. So they go back and forth. They sit at the breast and go back and forth between eating and just comfort suckling, self-soothing.
Yes. That's absolutely right. Once complementary foods are added at 6 months, the infant may be able to feed less often at night. Maybe able. That's not a guarantee. Mm-mm. We know that there's a lot of research behind that, that they're stuffing your kid full of food does not necessarily mean that they're going to sleep longer
go ahead.
However, when mothers work outside of the home and express their milk while away from their infants, some dyads may engage in reverse cycle feeding. Intentionally limiting nighttime feeding is associated with early cessation of exclusive breastfeeding. And this is hard because when you do return to work, you just want to sleep at night, right? You have to be able to function for your job because that takes precedence for whatever reason. It just does, right? Like, we're just like, I need to sleep.
Yeah. I have to sleep to be able to function at your job, or you get fired because capitalism.
Right.
I mean, like, our society is not set up to support any of this biological behavior. Mm-mm.
No. And your baby's like, I don't care about that. I just need my mom. Like, I just need my mother to be home with me. I need to be able to eat. And babies sometimes will make up for, you know, for not having their parent with them all day long. So they might reverse cycle. It is not uncommon to see that. Expressing milk is less efficient than direct breastfeeding, even with the most efficient breast pump, and direct breastfeeding more often at night may help with maintaining milk production after returning to work. And that is one of the things. If your baby is sleeping over through the night when you return to work and you're struggling to try to pump enough milk for your baby during the daytime, that is one of the things that we say, is to start implementing something during the night again, because those nighttime feeds are really what keeps your milk supply where we need it to be. If your baby is not eating during the night and you're home with them all day, then I don't tell people to wake up during the night. I know this is probably confusing, but if your baby is eating on demand, responsive feeding all day, and then sleeps a longer stretch at night, we don't need to worry about waking up overnight because your baby is getting what they need during the daytime. If you are working all day and just pumping, we know that that isn't going to keep your supply where we need it to. And then you're sleeping all night, your supply might dip. It might go down. So we need to probably implement more pumping or more feeding or something to keep your supply where we need it to be for your baby. Because pumps just aren't as efficient. It doesn't matter. It could be the most efficient pump, but it still is not going to be as efficient as your baby is.
Yeah.
So should we talk about the sleep?
Oof. Yeah.
Newborns are without a functional circadian clock. We know they don't have a circadian rhythm. They're not born with that circadian rhythm. You know, people always say, my baby's got their days and nights confused. I know. Abby always laughs at that.
They don't know days and nights. Come on.
They never had them right to begin with. So they can't have them confused. They don't know what's going on. So they don't have a circadian rhythm. Your milk, however, has melatonin in it, which helps them to establish a circadian rhythm. So continuous proximity and skin-to-skin contact with the mother or other adult, with the partner, help the infant gradually transition to extrauterine life. Infants rely on proximity and skin-to-skin contact with their mothers to regulate their breathing, temperature, heart rate in the early weeks and months of life. Mother-infant physical contact among breastfeeding dyads, bed sharing, and baby wearing are included in this. Predicts maternal responsiveness to infant hunger cues, whereas proximity without physical contact does not. Responsive feeding, in turn, is associated with longer duration of exclusive breastfeeding. Nighttime separation from the mother in infants as old as 10 months can cause infant distress and elevated cortisol levels. And that was one of the things that I sent to my client that I was working with. They're talking about a 10-month-old baby in that paragraph.
Yeah.
Okay. Nighttime separation from the mother and infants as old as 10 months can cause infant distress and elevated cortisol levels. You know what age they say to start sleep training? Is it like 4 months?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, that something they mentioned in this article that I didn't know was that when you're sleep training and you're leaving the baby and the baby is crying and the cortisol levels are increasing, as your baby learns that no one's coming and in the subsequent nights after that stop crying, we learn that the baby doesn't stop waking up. The baby just stops calling for you because they know you're not coming. And what I didn't know was that the cortisol levels, even when they're, you know, in all these, or I guess I never thought about that, is that like the cortisol levels still stay high. Mm-hmm. So the baby's not crying. The baby is not, you know, doesn't sound in distress to you because cried out worked, right? Cried out, you know, they're not crying anymore. But they are still waking and their cortisol levels are still really high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I've got that part highlighted. So we can talk about that after our break.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have time to blow my nose right now.
Blow your nose.
Sorry, I'm just a complete mess over here. Am I the only one who just has like a runny nose all the time, just 24/7, 365 days a week? I mean, no. A week a year. That's how long my weeks are.
Abby's a mess over there.
All right, we'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Fairhaven Health. Are you tired of defrosting milk from your storage bags only to find it's too much or too little milk? What if you could defrost the exact amount of milk every time you need? The Milky's milk trays look like regular ice cube trays, but have 16 semi-cylinder cavities that each hold 1 ounce of milk. When it's time to feed your baby or prepare bottles for the day, just pop however many breast milk sticks you need into any type of brand of bottle. Nothing wasted. No extra breast milk left over, tempting your caregiver to overfeed your baby and blow through your precious stash. Once the sticks are frozen, just transfer them to a freezer bag, freeing up the milk trays for your next batch of breast milk. And they come with lids so you can stack them, which will free up space in your freezer. They are reusable, environmentally friendly, made with food-safe plastic, and can be used for baby food later on. No BPA, no phthalates or dyes. Check out Milky's Milk Trays at fairhavenhealth.com. That's fairhavenhealth.com. And use code BADASS for 15% off of your purchase. And today's episode is also brought to you by Rumble Tough. The Rumble Tough Breeze is a top-of-the-line breast pump with a rechargeable battery that fits in the palm of your hand. The powerful motor lasts 2,000 plus hours and has a 2-year warranty. The memory button allows you to record your most effective pumping session and recall it every time you wish. Combine the Breeze with the RumbleTuff Go Cups and you're pumping hands-free and on the go. Every RumbleTuff pumper, pump user, or pumper qualifies for free pumping support with an IBCLC. Because they care, each pump comes with a manual handle kit to convert your electric pump into a manual pump at no extra cost. You should not have to figure it out alone. Let experts help you get the support you deserve. Additionally, each pump box includes a flange fit ruler so you can determine which of the 15 flanges they offer will fit you best. Yes, nipple size does matter. Check out the entire line at rumbletuff.com. That's RUMBLETUFF.com. And use code BADASS for 20% off of your order. And our sponsors and the promo codes can all be found in the show notes under this episode, along with that Patreon link. And at BadassBreastfeedingPodcast.com, you'll find all of our other episodes and information about scheduling your very own one-on-one online lactation consultation with Diane.
Okay, so before I get to that, I got to go to another good point in here that needs to be talked about. Infants also benefit from being carried even when not feeding. A randomized controlled trial in a Western high-income setting showed that increased carrying of infants in arms or in a baby carrier with body contact, like baby wearing, was associated with a 43% reduction in fussing and crying at 6 weeks of age. So when people say you're going to spoil your baby, put him down, put him in a seat, put him on the floor, put him wherever, you can tell them, actually, carrying my baby is associated with a 43% reduction in crying. So this is your baby that wants to be in close proximity to you all the time. This is where they feel safe. And when they are attached to your body, they don't have to be feeding. They don't have to be feeding 24/7. But if they're in a carrier, they're just as happy. Sometimes every once in a while, somebody will tell me their baby doesn't like to be in a carrier. And I'm like, I don't know.
I used to think that about Jack. And I think it was because I was anxious about him being in a carrier. I was anxious about him being like so close. I remember saying that. I was like, he doesn't like being so close to me.
What? Loved it.
Yeah. I mean, I am the one who has got the closeness issues, not the brand new baby.
Yeah. Or I think it might just be the care. Like, you have to find what's comfortable. Maybe they're just in a position that's not comfortable for them.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable with it.
But I think that we all have just like really weird things with being close because we're just not, this is not the culture for, you know, intimacy.
No, not at all. So expectations of sleeping through the night. There is an expectation that a good baby, in quotes, should be able to sleep long stretches through the night from a very young age. The recommendation of exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life is often the social expectation, but is incompatible with the good baby expectation. The scientific data show that expectations of prolonged infant sleep periods are unrealistic. And then they went on to like look at different studies where they actually like measured sleep. And I'm going to go to where Abby was talking about here with sleep training. A number of techniques are designed to condition infants and toddlers to sleep for longer periods at night. They are based on reducing the infant's expectation of a specific behavior associated with sleep onset and conditioning infants to soothe themselves back to sleep alone without adult intervention when they have normal sleep cycle awakening. So babies do have sleep cycles just like we do. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we wake up. I was just telling Abby, too, like I slept terrible last night. I kept waking up and, you know, but I could readjust myself and get in a different position and maybe open my window if I was hot or, you know, whatever. Baby, get up and go to the bathroom if I have to go. Babies can't do any of that stuff. So if they wake with a sleep cycle, they call you to come and help them.
Yeah.
And even they need you.
Yeah. And even on the nights where you're not, where you say like, oh, I slept so good. I just closed my eyes. And when I woke up, it was 8 o'clock in the morning. You still went through all your sleep cycles.
Mm-hmm.
you still were coming in and out of a deep sleep. You know, yep. That's why you don't wake up in the same position you went to sleep in. You know, no. you come out of these sleeps. You might not wake all the way up. You might not look at the clock. You might not have to go to the bathroom, but you're still going in and out of these sleep cycles. And this is like your baby does this too. And your baby has to do this. And when we do things that interrupt this, this is a SIDS risk. Your baby has mm-hmm. to come out of these deep sleeps frequently.
Yeah. And what it says here is training young infants to sleep alone by failing to respond to their crying in a distant crib causes significant infant stress, as indicated by elevated infant cortisol levels, which persists on the nights when the infant is no longer crying. Parents often experience distress at not responding to their infant cries and often find sleep training is not effective. So, and I've read that before too, where people find that, oh yeah, sleep training worked. My baby doesn't wake up anymore. It only takes a couple yep. of nights mm-hmm. and they don't wake up anymore.
They sleep actually the night.
Do. Yeah, they don't. They actually nope. do still wake up. They just don't. You just don't know about it.
They just don't and that's what the research you, tells. You're not yeah. coming.
That's what the research tells us about it. One of the things here too, night pumping, nighttime pumping while feeding an infant a bottle of expressed milk would be expected to markedly disrupt maternal sleep. In addition, feeding milk pumped from a different time of day would not provide the appropriate level of melatonin. Circadian rhythms are not only disrupted by turning on lights, but by sitting up and engaging in any active activity. After feeding, a bottle-fed infant may require burping. If the infant is not sleeping next to their parent, further sleep disruption to parents and infants may occur, as the infant may not fall asleep readily while alone and may require time for calming and soothing. So, this, I love that. I love that they put that in there, because how often do we have parents that ask us, can't I just give a bottle overnight? Can I just give a bottle so that the mother can sleep overnight? We have partners ask us about that all the time. And people really are very like, yes, this is what we want to do. I want my partner to give a bottle overnight so I can sleep. You're probably still going to be awake, because your partner is going to be getting up with a crying baby. How do you sleep during that? I don't know how you sleep through it. Maybe you do, but your partner's getting up with the crying baby, changing the diaper, giving a bottle, and then it's harder for the baby to settle back in again because there's probably lights turning on. People are getting up. They're moving around. It's going to be harder for you to get back to sleep and harder for the baby to get back to sleep. What is easier is have your partner get up, get the baby if the baby's not sleeping right next to you, and give you the baby so that you can feed the baby in the dark laying down.
Yep.
And everybody will be able to go back to sleep a lot easier. They're also saying if you have to get up, use a red light, because it does not disrupt circadian rhythm. And I have heard that before too, that people get like a red light bulb and put it in and use that during the nighttime instead while they're changing a diaper or something, because turning on the lights disrupts circadian rhythm and we want your baby to stay as asleep as possible during this time so that they can go back to sleep. But if you're giving them a bottle, then you got to burp them. And then you got to keep them upright. Yeah. So, I mean, how is that making it so that everybody goes back to sleep a lot faster? So that if you're, you know, if you're somebody that's considering like, let me just have my partner give a bottle during the night, consider that it might mean that everybody's up a little bit longer. It might not be as efficient as you're thinking it's going to be. I mean, it sounds great. Mm-hmm. But it might not be as efficient of a plan as you want it to be. Use of infant tracking apps and related digital technology.
I love that they bring that in there.
I know. I did
and
too.
Talk about like all the anxiety that it causes.
Yep. Although tracking apps used to monitor infant feeding and sleeping may be marketed with claims of reducing parental anxiety, they can paradoxically increase anxiety and reduce parent-baby interaction when observing the baby becomes replaced by checking the app. Apps and devices that allow parents to monitor infant sleep from afar normalize parent-infant separation and imply that some fundamental aspects of infant caregiving can be outsourced by technology. And I love that they put that in there too. And I never really thought about it that we're totally using an app to parent our child.
I know, it's crazy to me. The baby's right here. Why are we tracking the baby with an app? You're right. The baby's right there.
Yeah.
It's like when I was driving home in this big snowstorm one time, I was driving home. It was like Snowmageddon. It was like the big snowstorm in the Midwest from several years ago. And I'm driving in it because I had to be at work. And I'm listening to the radio and all they're talking about is how much it's snowing. Oh my God, it's snowing so much. I'm like, we're all in it. I see. Can you play some music or something?
Right.
Like, it's just like, I don't need a weather report right now. I'm in the weather. Mm-hmm. I don't need an app to tell me what's going on with the baby. I'm holding the baby.
Right.
But
or
we
you
do,
should be at least
we don't, yeah.
be holding the baby.
We do these things that are just like, we think, just because it exists that it's necessary. And no, it exists likely to make money off of you freaking out about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to track a diaper change or something like that between your partner or between daycare, but if you're in your house, you shouldn't need an app. That's what responsive feeding is. We're not tracking it on an app. You're responding. And what can happen with this? Because you might be thinking like, oh, an app doesn't give me more anxiety. But if you look at it and you go, oh my God, my baby fed 15 times in the last 24 hours. Are they getting enough to eat? What's happening? Why are they feeding so much? That is going to draw your anxiety. When in actuality, you're just responding to your baby and feeding them when they need to be fed, which is normal. But the app is telling you that it's not. The app is driving your anxiety.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people tell me that once they deleted the app, they felt better.
Yeah. And the app doesn't know, that your baby is, you know, or that you have like a smaller storage capacity and your baby eats more frequently. Or that you have a larger storage capacity and your baby eats less frequently. Like, it doesn't know these things.
No, it doesn't
take any of these like nuances into consideration.
No. And when I ask people like, okay, I remember being at somebody's house doing a home visit once, like several years ago. And I was like, okay, tell me about the feeding or whatever. And she's like, oh, here it is right here. And pulls up her app and it's got like graphs. Blue was the left boob and pink was the right boob. And like, she's got all these like bar graphs and all of this stuff that this app did to determine how often this baby's been feeding. And I'm like,
yeah,
holy shit. Like, this is it. This takes a lot of time to be putting in all this information all the time. It's just a lot. It's a lot. So if you can get away with not using it, try, because it can cause you way more anxiety. And just watch your baby and just respond to your baby. That's all you need to do is respond to your baby. So they break it down after all of this. They do break down into different recommendations, and I'll read a few of them. Or actually, let me read this one first, because this one was important. Supporting physiological infant care. Provider practices that support physiological infant care, approaches such as Possum's sleep program, which are based on normal physiology, can help support parents. This type of approach is an infant-centered cue care program that can result in more consolidated sleep when used in infants over 6 months of age and does not negatively impact breastfeeding. Aggressive marketing of commercial milk formula has no place in the healthcare setting and can undermine breastfeeding and mother's confidence. Encouraging the family to provide household help in a culturally expected manner has been shown to be a positive factor in preventing postpartum psychological distress. So this is from, like I said, these protocols are written by doctors that are saying we need to support physiological infant care. We need to do this.
In breastfeeding and care doctors. Not.
Yes. Expert in breastfeeding care doctors. They're saying we need to not be handing out the infant formula when a mother says, because even like the place that I used to work, well, the parents want formula for overnight, so we can just give them some formula for overnight. Are we supporting breastfeeding or are we not supporting breastfeeding? Encouraging people to realize that this is normal. This is normal infant behavior. Everybody wants to sleep. Nobody's nobody's saying you can never sleep again. That is not what we're saying. Everybody wants to sleep. What we need to do is normalize it and encourage ways to get more sleep.
Well, yeah. And I mean, following the biological norms of the baby is actually how you end up getting more sleep. I mean, there's the they go over all of that research here too, of like how many more minutes of sleep you get when you're bed sharing.
Right. And how many more minutes of sleep you get when you're breastfeeding over formula feeding.
Right. Exactly.
You actually get more sleep when you're breastfeeding than if you're formula feeding. And there is research to back that up.
Right.
And if you're bed sharing.
Yeah.
Or sleeping at least in close proximity. I'm sorry.
Right. No, it's okay. No, there was somewhere in here and I can't find it now. I was trying to find it about how like the formula feeding, how it just like normalizes the fact that babies are supposed to be sleeping through the whole night when that's actually just not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's anyway, they don't. Yeah. And like you said, it's, you know, babies at 10 months old, how I mentioned that nighttime separation from the mother in infants as old as 10 months can cause infant distress and elevated cortisol levels. So if anybody is telling you, oh, your baby's 6 months, they should be sleeping all night away from you in their own crib. According to who?
What?
I mean, come on.
I just want to know who that happens for. Like,
who's actually experiencing that without going through some kind of sleep training? Expectations of prolonged infant sleep periods are unrealistic. That's the bottom line. And the other protocol that they have, bed sharing and breastfeeding, protocol number 6, we went through that. Like I said, we went through that, earlier this year. I can't even remember when it was. It was a couple of months ago that we did that episode. And it talks all about the bed sharing, safe bed sharing when you are breastfeeding. And there are a lot of other countries that have abandoned the idea of saying no longer bed share.
Mm-hmm.
There are countries that are saying, let's talk about how to do it safely instead of saying, don't do it at all.
Yep.
Because you will get more sleep if you are bed sharing.
And it's safer. And it's safer for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's safer.
It is safer.
And it's just like advertised as the exact opposite. It's crazy.
Yeah. So avoid non-physiological disruptions to maternal infant nighttime sleep as strategies for improving parental well-being. These include nighttime pumping, bottle feeding, placing the infant outside the parent's reach. Consider a dim red light if lighting is anticipated. Mitigate potential risks of bed sharing by teaching safe positioning in bed. Owing to lack of data for exclusively pumping dyads, it is unknown whether these dyads represent a hazard circumstance for bed sharing. The C position, cuddle curl, should be taught to exclusively pumping parents, recognizing that bed sharing is common and may occur unintentionally. This is what we were just talking about. It's important to give the information so that people have it to do it safely.
Yeah, because they're going to do it.
Because they're going to do it.
You cannot.
So why not fight. Do it safely?
Right. You cannot fight nature. People are tired and they want to sleep. That's it.
In the absence of hazardous circumstances, mothers sleeping in proximity to their infants is recommended. Breastfeeding with proximate sleep in the absence of hazards may allow mothers to maximize their rest and well-being if sleep deprivation is a concern. Breastfeeding with proximate sleep may protect against sleep-related death and is associated with responsive infant feeding and longer durations of any exclusive breastfeeding. When they say in the absence of hazardous circumstances, we are talking about drinking and drug use. And when I say drug use, I'm also talking about like, did you just have a C-section and you're still on painkillers that are going to make you sleepy, stuff like that. Those are the hazardous situations that we're avoiding. But again, if you don't have the information,
right,
it's hard for you to do it safely. So this gives you all of the information to do it safely.
sleep training in approximately the first 6 months of life is contraindicated, and sleep training in the first year is not recommended. Acute care program for infant sleep may be a physiological-based alternative for parents who desire sleep intervention. Encourage the mother to sleep when the infant sleeps, when this is possible. Remind parents that not all sleep must occur during nighttime hours.
I know some parents really feel like they can't sleep during the day. That's not something that a lot of people do. I have zero problem sleeping during the day. I can absolutely nap. That is was never an issue for me. But I have had plenty of clients over the years that say, I am not somebody that sleeps during the day. This is not something that works for me. Saying sleep when the baby sleeps is not always convenient. I get that. But it is recommended if you can do it. You know, I mean, get the sleep where you can.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be something that's good to just experiment with right now. And if you sleep too long and you feel groggy, then set an alarm.
Yeah. And they do talk about where you can get, you know, like that there is more research that is needed to help support parents throughout this stuff. Encourage parents to directly monitor infant feeding and sleeping cues. Discourage the use of tracking apps and monitoring devices for infant feeding and sleeping. Areas for future research. And I really do like this too, because it brings up a lot of things. More research is needed about physiological infant care, particularly in the context of diverse cultural beliefs and values. Research is needed into whether there is a role for pacifiers in physiologic infant care. Continued research into the optimal duration of paid leave for mothers and their partners would be helpful. More evidence is needed on the benefits of bed sharing and breast sleeping. It is known that breastfeeding is associated with reduced risk of SIDS. But if this association is casual, it is unclear what aspects of breastfeeding are protective. It is likely that protective effect is at least partially behavioral and not only from the milk itself. And if so, bed sharing would contribute to and confound the protective effectiveness of breastfeeding on SIDS. More data on bed sharing and dyads who exclusively pump are necessary to ascertain their infant's risk and sleep-related death. More epidemiological and videographic data on assortment of feeding methods, including transgender parents, would be helpful. Finally, it would be vitally important to be able to consistently collect infant feeding data on all cases of sleep-related death. I think it would be amazing to have more research on pumping on parents that exclusively pump, because we don't have a lot of information on that.
No, that's true.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some of that.
But yeah, so this is, I'm going to put all of this into the show notes so that you can see it. And it even comes with like a little flyer that gives you physiologic infant care supporting breastfeeding, sleep, and well-being.
Oh my God, and I didn't see the flyer.
Yeah, it's at the very end.
I didn't scroll down that far. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I saw the references cute. And I was like, done.
Yep. Sleep near your baby. Avoid getting up at night. Keep the lights off at night. Breastfeed at night rather than pump or use bottles if you can. Avoid feeding solids or formula to improve sleep. Do not sleep train the first 6 months. It's not recommended in the first year. Bed sharing safety is very important.
I like how they talk about like use a barrier cream and just don't change the diaper.
Oh yeah, they did bring that up too. I'm glad you mentioned that, because they do say, you know what, that just wakes your baby up at night. We want to get babies back to sleep.
Right.
You don't need, if they're breastfeeding, you don't need to burp them. You don't need to change them.
Yeah, don't burp them. Don't wipe their teeth with a washcloth or some craziness like dentists say. Don't even change their diaper.
Change their diaper, well, but sure. You know,
okay, otherwise. But if you can avoid it and it doesn't seem to be bothering them, don't bother with it. I think that's one of the things that we get really hooked up on, is just like, you know, oh, change the diaper. I know I did. Yeah. I was just like constantly changing the diaper throughout the night. It's like, why?
Yeah, it wakes them up.
Yep.
And we want everybody to get back to sleep. I mean, the very newborn, it can be hard because they do poop a lot during the night. But as that goes away and your baby is a little bit older, totally avoid it. If you're if you're bed sharing, I wouldn't be changing a diaper during the night.
No way.
Mm-mm. Totally okay to do. I know some people are out there going, oh my God.
I know. But
well, it's just totally okay.
Try it before you knock it.
So I will put all this stuff in the show notes so you can read it for yourself, because there's a lot more to it that we didn't read. But basically following your baby's responsive feeding and following those physiologic cues is really important to do.
Yeah, there's good stuff in here. I recommend reading it.
Yeah, for sure.
You print out this flyer and give it to your mother-in-law.
I know. There you go. Give it to your pediatrician.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.